Well, we had been tasked, mandated by the council, to identify perpetrators on the use of toxic chemicals in Syria over the last 2 years. And we spent some time looking at these. We had 9 cases that we mentioned we would want to go forward with, and now we have finally concluded on the 9 cases. So the report talks about 3 cases that the leadership panel has found sufficiency to prove who the responsible members are. In the 3 cases, the responsible ones were identified as the Syrian Air Force in 2 of them that were with the chlorine use, and in 1 of them ISIS with the use of sulfur mustard. There were other 3. I will tell you the names, but it might be interesting to you. The one sufficiency is Talmenes. And that happened in 2014 on the 21st of April. The second one was 16th of March 2015 in Sarmin. And these 2 are attributable to the Syrian Air Force. And the third one is the 21st of August of 2015 in the city of Marea, attributable to ISIS.
You were mentioning then that there were 3 conclusive cases and 6 that were not?
Well, in 3 cases, the leadership panel determined that it was close to sufficient information to reach a conclusion. But we're waiting, those cases remain open because we're waiting for some analysis that is forthcoming from forensic institutes and laboratories, and we need these to be able to reach conclusion on those. But the panel will provide an update on these 3 cases in the 4th report, which is due in mid-September. These 3 cases cover Zeta on the 18th of April 2014, Kumenas 16th of March 2015, and Binish, which is 24th of March 2015. There were a last set of 3, and these ones the leadership panel has determined that they are inconclusive. We cannot get sufficient information, or there is information that is too contradictory for us to be able to continue with this one. So there will be no further investigation in these 3 cases, and that would be Kavrizita 11th of April 2014, Altamana 29th to 30th of April 2014, and Altamana again 25th to 26th May of 2014.
Now, how were the investigations conducted?
Well, we had an unprecedented mandate. No one had ever done this before in the United Nations. So we really didn't have standard operating procedures to engage. We had to develop our own parameters of the investigation. And what we did is the investigators used the fact-finding mission's findings in The Hague from the OPCW, who had originally investigated what was the substance used in these cases. And so we did a whole study of what they had there. And then we began to independently collect and analyze and corroborate the information and further information within the allotted time frame. As you know, we have a time frame where we finish the 23rd of September of this year. And it was very necessary for us to do the investigation in depth. And it had to be done in an independent, impartial, objective, and a very professional manner, because we were very much being looked at by everybody on how we engage. And this issue, as you know, is of high relevance to many actors. So we then sought expert support from forensic and technical and research institutes. And they played a very big role in corroboration of the information we were collecting, so it could be independently verified through them. So it was a professional, I would say, fit-for-purpose manner that we chose as our procedures. It was really absolutely essential to make sure that there was a sufficient degree of relevant and credible information and evidence at the end. If not, it would have been very hard for the leadership panel to reach conclusions.
You did not actually send people on the ground to collect samples, but that these were based on information that had already been collected at the time of the incident?
Yes. What happens is this mandate, the mandate we have, is not about verifying the use of a substance, because that really belongs, if you're a state party of the OPCW, of the Chemical Weapon Convention, it belongs to the OPCW. So the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons instituted what is called a fact-finding mission of their own inspectors. They did not have a mandate to attribute who had done it. They were only asked to say what had been used in that allegation. Where we come in is our mandate says that from the moment that they conclude and verify that a substance was used, then we need to try to find out who had used it. To be able to verify who had used it, you need different sets of, if you wish, of tools. In a way, you don't need to engage on sampling of environmental sampling or, again, blood sampling or looking so much into the effects on people to determine the substance. What you need to do is, how was the substance used? What was the ammunition utilized? What was the delivery system utilized? What was the motive behind such an attack? And this presumably will lead you little by little towards a conclusion about who was responsible, and that's exactly what we did. Neither the FFM or ourselves were able to go to the sites, because the sites are under intense attack and have been under intense attack for the last 2 years, so security was impossible. But we did send many deployments, both to Damascus and to neighboring countries, and we had a lot of witness interviews that we did both in the field, in the region, as well as through electronic forms.
So then, finally, what are the conclusions of the investigation and the report's recommendations?
All we have to do is identify, and in that sense, we have identified as perpetrators basically two actors. One, the Syrian armed forces, particularly the Air Force, and the other one, ISIS, in the case of Marea, which was one of the three cases that proved positive on a positive identification. This information now is with the Security Council, and it's up to them to follow up on accountability processes. What are they going to do with this? Is something that they must now engage in.
How disappointed were you with the result of this investigation?
I think I'm not disappointed at all. In fact, I think what is important is it can be done. It can be done. I mean, remember, no one had ever attempted to do something like this. It's almost like doing archaeology and in a very visible environment as the United Nations is, with very few tools to engage. The fact that we were able in such a short time span to reach conclusions that were positive in at least a third of our cases, I think is quite extraordinary. The leadership panel, when we were looking at all of this for the year, we noted with great concern that toxic chemicals have been used and continue to be used in the Syrian Arab Republic. I mean, even through the length of the time that we were engaged, we could see in the papers that they were continuing to happen. And we really strongly believe that this must stop. We did notice, because we had to, we look around, we were asking questions, and we find that there is a diversification of both the type of chemicals used today and the actors involved. They seem to be multiplying. So we just want to say it very clearly, that all those responsible for the use of toxic chemicals as weapons in Syria must be held accountable in order to deter such actions in the future. And it is the leadership panel's hope that the results of the mechanism's investigation will really contribute to this process through the Security Council.
To be clear, you're saying that the use of chemical weapons not only continues in Syria, but the number of parties making use of chemical weapons is multiplying.
There are more actors today in Syria with the ability and the availability of the substances and the ability to mix them and use them, if they so choose, as chemical weapons. And this is something very worrying.